Okay, now go back down. Get a Bible.
Where's the Bible? I'm in a church. I don't know where a Bible is.
I think there are some right over there. Or right back here. No, those are
right on the table. Yeah.
You're going to read out of the big one?
Yes.
Giver.
Don't worry, I don't have bivocals yet. But I'm getting there.
So, Mark chapter 6.
Oh my. This is a new experience. Mark chapter 6. It's in Latin. Good thing I can read Latin Roman numeral. It's 6:30 to 34.
Right.
Right here. Okay. And the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. And he said unto them, Come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. And the people saw them departing, and many knew him, and ran afoot thither onto all the cities, and out went them, and came together unto him. And Jesus, when he came out, saw much people, and was moved with compassion toward them, because they were as sheep, not having a shepherd, and began to teach them many things. May the Lord add the richest blessings to the reading of his holy word. Thanks to be God.
There's more.
Oh, really?
Yes. That's okay. 53?
Oh, really? Oh.
To 56.
Can you tell I'm not used to this? Okay. Okay, that was the commercial. Okay, that's... Well, and when they had passed over, they came into the land of Gennesaret and drew to the shore. And when they were come out of the ship, straightway they knew him. And they ran through that whole region round about, and began to carry about in beds those that were sick, where they heard he was. And whithersoever he entered into the villages or cities or countries, they laid the sick in the street and besought him that they might touch, if it were but the border of his garment. And as many as touched him were made whole. Amen. May the Lord add the richest blessings to the readings of his holy word. Thanks be to God. This is heavy.
Thank you, Gina. So one of the more fruitful outcomes of using the lectionary as a guideline for preaching or study is that it often encourages us to hear some familiar texts in new ways. I'm not usually excited when I see the lectionary reading skip over a large chunk of text like we saw today, because I don't like losing the context. And oftentimes, the verses are left out in order to avoid parts of the text that are the most difficult to explain, and therefore often the most salacious and interesting. But this particular instance is different. In the sixth chapter of Mark's Gospel, includes Jesus being rejected in his hometown of Nazareth, recounts the story of Jesus sending out his disciples. They went on a successful mission with a stick they had purchased from the Christian supplies store, if you'll recall. It tells us about the death of John the Baptist at the hands of King Herod. It shows Jesus miraculously feeding the crowds, and it describes Jesus alarming his disciples as he approaches them, walking on the water. Now, that's an awful lot of action in just one chapter, but this week's reading goes out of its way to avoid all of those stories, and instead invites us to examine the transitions between our more famous stories with an eye towards understanding those transitional passages as gospel. Our first set of verses is often glossed over as simply setting the context for the feeding of the 5,000. It explains that the disciples have now returned from their mission, and it explains where the crowds have come from, setting the stage for one of Jesus' most well-known miracles. But if we pause a moment to hear this text as gospel, instead of simply setting the context, we hear all about relationship. The disciples aren't coming back from a short vacation. They're returning from their first experience of ministry without their leader. They had already walked with Jesus, they had listened to him preach, and they had watched him engage in healing and in the casting out of demons. Now they're back from doing those things without him for the first time, and Jesus is keenly interested in hearing about how things went. His posture is one that exudes care and intimacy. The first thing to do is gather the people together so that Jesus can listen. Jesus wants to hear about everything that they did and taught, to listen for what went well and where they struggled, to hear their stories, and no doubt to share in laughter with them when Peter or John shares a story about the family with the goofy kid he had dinner with two towns down the road. Jesus cares and listens. And he cares about the lives of his disciples today every bit as much as he did then. In this text, we find a reminder that Jesus wants to listen to us if only we're willing to speak to him. After hearing these stories, Jesus offers a recommendation that he's gleaned from his own experience. It's time for a break. Jesus calls his disciples to the wilderness to rest, a practice reminiscent of Jesus' own practice earlier in the Gospel of Mark. In the first chapter, Jesus is driven into the wilderness by the Spirit for 40 days. Later in that chapter, he again retreats in the wilderness for a time of solitary prayer. He goes off alone to pray once more in the part of this chapter that we've skipped over. We don't just hear from Jesus that rest and time for individual prayer matter. We see by his actions that it's critical to make time for rest in the divine. Back in the first chapter of Mark's gospel, we see that time cut short when the disciples come to find Jesus. In this instance, the disciples' time of rest is over before it begins, when the crowds recognize and follow them. We live in a culture that preaches self-care quite vigorously, so we would probably excuse Jesus if he told the crowds that he and his disciples had closed up shop and that they would need to come back in the morning after everyone had had an opportunity to rest. But that's not how Jesus responds. Instead, the text tells us that Jesus had compassion for them. He felt something for them. There is a willingness, even an eagerness in Jesus, to put his own needs aside and to deal with the needs of the people in front of him. These aren't the needs of his closest friends, which he actually marginalizes here, or the needs of the rich, or the needs of the powerful. These are simply the crowds, those who are poor and desperate. Jesus and his disciples hadn't had time to rest or eat. They were tired and hungry. They felt a need to be alone. And yet, Jesus takes time for the people in front of him. He allows himself to feel something for them. He does not harden his heart, but rather he opens it. It's an incredible thing. It's extremely difficult. So often in our lives, we harden our hearts to others intentionally in order to cope with the pain and the suffering and the inequality that exists in our world. Jesus' action here calls us to take a step toward compassion and reminds us that he accepts us as he listens to our struggles to do just that. For Jesus, this life of compassion begins with understanding. The way Jesus sees the people helps him to have compassion. He describes them as sheep without a shepherd, a very evocative metaphor just on its own, but one that's made more powerful when we understand where that phrase comes from in the Old Testament tradition. The word sheep is used frequently to describe God's people. And so here Jesus acknowledges that these crowds of the sick and the desperate and the poor are in fact God's people. The word shepherd, meanwhile, is often a royal image in the scriptures, used of both kings and other important leaders. The whole phrase, sheep without a shepherd, is found in the book of Numbers on the lips of Moses. Reading from Numbers chapter 27, Moses spoke to the Lord, saying, "Let the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint someone over the congregation who shall go out before them and come in before them, who shall lead them out and bring them in, so that the congregation of the Lord may not be like sheep without a shepherd." So the Lord said to Moses, "Take Joshua, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand upon him." Without going overboard here, Joshua in Hebrew and Jesus in Greek, the same name, which is one of many little points of intersection between the Old Testament narrative and what's happening in this section of Mark's gospel. He's drawing on all this imagery to say Jesus is something special. And he wrote, Jesus isn't just saying that the people are lost or wandering in some general way in his use of this phrase. He's making a political statement that the leaders of Israel, both political and religious, have been found wanting. That's why we were introduced to the excess and evil of King Herod in the passage just before this, and why we'll be introduced to some of the inadequacies of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law in the passage just after this. It's a message that remains true in our own day. If we put our faith in our political or religious leaders, we're usually setting ourselves up for disappointment. Our real shepherd is the one risen from the dead, namely Jesus the Christ. It's why Jesus' compassion here doesn't lead immediately to feeding. The text doesn't tell us that Jesus had compassion on them, and so he fed them, though he eventually does. Instead, we hear that Jesus had compassion on them, and so he began to teach them. That teaching is the root of his compassion for them. He wants this people not just to be fed or healed, but to understand that their true shepherd has come and that his kingdom is breaking into the world. When I internalize that lesson, when you internalize that lesson, when you believe it with all your heart, all your soul, and all your strength, then the reaction of the crowds makes so much more sense. Their desperation to find the one that gives them life makes so much more sense. Getting a glimpse of Jesus in the distance and running ahead to where that boat might land makes sense. Putting your sick friend on a mat and carrying him to another town makes sense. Spending days in the wilderness without food or drink makes sense. When we internalize who our true shepherd is, we are suddenly more inclined to follow him, to speak with him, to listen to him, and to set our hearts on seeing his kingdom come here on earth through our actions. This is the good news. Let us respond together in song, singing number 563 in the hymn book, "Jesus, You Have Come to the Lakeshore."